Before we start the actual meeting, can I just say that this meeting will be recorded, and the sound recording will subsequently be made available via the council's website on charnwood.gov.uk/pages/committees. Please also note that under the openness of the Local Government Bodies Regulation 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recording is not under the council's control. I would now like to look at the agenda and go for apologies, please.
You've got apologies from Councillor Hadji Nicolaou, Councillor Gaskell, Councillor Murphy, and substitutes with Councillor Gerald and Councillor Capleton.
Minutes of the previous, we've only just started here, apologies, that's all.
Okay.
Minutes of the previous meeting, to confirm as a correct record, the minutes of the meeting held on the 19th of March 2018. You've all had a copy of them. Is it your wish to sign them as a true record?
Yeah.
All in favour?
Yep.
I don't have to ask. Disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Do we have any?
Chair, I don't know whether I should or not, but there's later on in the report, myself could be referenced in there. I don't know whether I need to declare a personal interest or not.
Adrian Ward, the monitoring officer, for the benefit of the tape, Chair, I think my advice would be that because a reporting question is purely to note and you're not actually making a decision, by all means declare an interest if you wish to, but there's probably no need to.
Thank you.
Questions under committee procedure to 12.8, no questions were received. Item 5, update on complaints received, and I'm going to ask Adrian to give us a report.
Thank you, Chair. This is the routine update report that the Commission receives, giving statistics, numbers of complaints that have come forward to myself about borough and parish and town councillors who may have breached the code of conduct. It has a summary in the appendix of each individual complaint at quite a high level, and what stage within the process it was either resolved at or where it's currently sitting at. So at top of page 10 in part B, you'll see that since the last meeting of the committee, we've had 4 new complaints received spanning the end of 2017-18 and the beginning of 2018-19, and one further case where we didn't actually have a complaint, but several borough council officers raised written concerns with myself about the actions of a council that I felt justified a report to a panel of the Member Conduct Committee. And paragraph 2 explains the splits between borough and town and parish councillors and the stages we've got to in relation to the new complaints. So for 4 out of the 5 complaints and concerns, they were resolved at the fact-finding stage and no further action is necessary. And in relation to the 5th instance, we're currently conducting an investigation. And then there's just some comparative information for previous years to show you the trend in number of complaints and the stages they've got to. And if there are any questions, I'll try and answer them.
Any questions?
Chair, my pack that's out here starts with agenda item 8. Seem to be missing the rest.
You should have the main pack. That's the supplementary.
That's the update that was sent by post separately, but there's a pack sent before that.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay.
Do we have a spare copy for that? This is an extra urgent item that's been brought on.
Okay.
There we go.
Thank you.
Do Do you want me to give you a minute to look through it?
And I'll catch up.
So, as I explained, Chair, this is really a report for information, and we're just asking the committee to note it. But as I said, if there aren't any questions, I will obviously try and answer them.
Councillor Draycott.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Draycott speaking. It's to do with the item on page 13, parish stroke town, the second one, where it talks about lack of cooperation from the councillor. Is that person still a councillor? And it worries me that there was a lack of cooperation. There's, you know, I mean, anybody could do that if they wanted to. So, and avoid whatever it is that is being carried out. So I take it there's actually no powers to force somebody to do that then.
If I could try and get a bit more detail, Chair. To my knowledge, that person is still a parish councillor at the parish concerned, but when it went to the member conduct panel, one of the things they asked us to do was to write to the parish council and ask them to formally notify the councillor concerned of the displeasure of the member conduct committee and the lack of cooperation. And I understand that the parish council have written to the councillor concerned suggesting that he takes note of the Nolan principles, and in particular the one about submitting himself to scrutiny in relation to explaining his actions when required to do so.
Okay.
It's probably another one of those examples, Chair, where there is an expectation on councillors to cooperate in the process, but there is no way of forcing them to do so.
And can I just explain that we don't have the power to remove a parish councillor? We don't have, this committee does not have the power to remove a parish councillor, no matter what we find at the panel meeting. It is not one of the options that we have, I'm afraid.
Here, it just concerns me. Let's say it was a really, really, really serious matter, and you can avoid the consequences. Just seems strange.
It's different when it's a parish council. It's different to when it's a Charnwood Borough councillor.
I didn't know that.
We have to notify the clerk to the council, don't we? And ask them to take the action through their members.
Right.
It's not for us to take that action, is it?
Correct. At the final stage of the process, Chair, after we've had a panel and looking to impose sanctions. In this particular case, there were no sanctions imposed because the lack of evidence, the panel decided that they couldn't determine whether or not there had been a breach of the code of conduct. But in relation to borough councillors and town and parish councillors, there is no way of compelling them to cooperate during an investigation.
Thank you.
Anyone else? No? I'll carry on then. Register of members' interests.
Okay.
Karen's going to talk to us about this.
So this is Karen Widdowson speaking, Democratic Services Manager. So this is a regular update report on the process of keeping the Register of Members' Interests up to date. The process of the past has been that we issue a six-monthly reminder to borough councillors and a quarterly reminder to the clerks of the parish and town councils. And my suggestion in the recommendations in the report is to bring a consistency of that process, in that we remind both the borough councillors and the parish clerks and at the same time, so on a six-monthly basis. So brings consistency of process, and also because a number of borough councillors are also parish councillors as well, so it brings that consistency. The other matter I want to raise is the response rate. So in the table on page 17, the response rate to the August reminder, which was sent out. Today's date, we checked the statistics this morning, and we have had a 37% response rate from the parish clerks, which is actually up from last time. It was only 30% last time. And for the borough councillors, we have unfortunately got a slight dip. We've got a 35% response rate. And last time, as you'll see in the report, it was 46%. Obviously, this is a process that Charnwood Borough Council follow. There is no legal requirement for the Democratic Services team, the monitoring officer, to remind members, but it seemed to be a good practice. And that's all I would say on this matter at the moment. Is there any questions?
Are you all happy that we go for the 6 monthly one for the parish and the borough councillors rather than the parish quarterly?
Yeah.
And it's to bring it all into, so it's all done together.
Yeah, Councillor Rawlings. All I'd say is it's disappointing, the response rate. Because we're not under a legal obligation, or rather the officers aren't under a legal obligation to chase it up, if you like, then I just, you know, last time I think they worked quite hard to get a better response rate, didn't you? And I almost wonder whether it's worth bothering, you know. It takes 1 minute to do it. You click on the link, look at your registered member's interest, and just say yes or no, unless there's something that needs changing. Maybe it'll take you 2 minutes, but I can't see why the response rate is so poor. And I'd just be concerned about wasting more officers' time basically helping councillors do something they should be doing anyway. So I think last time I think I was saying contact the whips and stuff like that to see what else you could do. And actually I think I've formed the view now personally, I don't know what the committee thinks, that we should just do the reminder and then those that come back do, and those that don't, it's their problem if they've got it wrong, really. Because it's on the individual councillors to keep their registered members' interests up to date.
Well, bear in mind that parish councillors don't have the whip. So
yeah, no, exactly. That was just an idea for borough. That was an idea for borough, not parish.
To push them, really.
Well, the clerks can. The clerks, the parish councillors can, because they can chase the councillors that haven't responded. But we can't force them to do that.
The problem is councillors. It's really only if councillors have got something to respond for.
If I can explain, when we send the email out, the reminder, we do ask for them to confirm one way or the other that they have. Right. So, yeah. And that's what this response rate is based on. I think it's a very good practice to send the reminders on a 6 monthly basis.
Yeah, definitely.
Do we track them is another matter, which you may have different views on, but...
I think we should still keep sending them 6 monthly, and then we won't do any more work on it, just to remind people.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we should continue with the 6 month reminders. It's definitely helpful. I just perhaps don't think that, as we were doing before, I think I was pushing for it last time, but now I just think actually we're doing more than we need to do, and I think it's good what we do, sending out 6 monthly reminders to everyone. That's probably all we need to do.
And through the chair, if I could just clarify, so the second recommendation is about providing statistics at the next meeting. Do you feel that's necessary then?
I think it's still worth it, because if it drops significantly or drops even more, then we've probably got a problem, haven't we, that we need to look at to do something about it. But I'm just conscious of officers' time, basically, in spending a lot of time doing this. But I think if in 6 months' time we come back and the percentages are even lower, we probably need to do something more. So I think we do need the percentages to monitor what the response rate is like and see if we've got a problem.
Do you all agree with that?
Agree.
Okay. Right, we go on to the, do you want to do the next item now then, before we do the work programme?
If you'd rather do it that way, Chair.
Well then, if we do need to bring anything into the work programme, we can bring it in.
Does the committee agree to an agenda variance then? Which is what you're doing.
We've all got a copy of this agenda variance. Are you all in favour that we discuss it now?
Yeah.
We've all had paperwork regarding it.
Do item A before item 7.
Yeah.
That's fine. Well, I'm going to hand over to Amy because he knows more about what's happening with it than I do, really.
Thank you, Chair. For the benefit of the parish council members, this is a borough council matter, so it might not mean very much to you, but by all means chip in and participate if you wish to. So the borough council has introduced a member grant scheme where each of the 52 borough councillors had £1,000 that they've been allocated to award grants to organisations, charities, fundraising groups, community groups, that sort of thing, operating within their ward. There is a process to be followed, so there is an application process and documentation that has to be completed. But what we have become aware of, and nothing necessarily wrong with this, but it is something we've become aware of, an issue that needs to be addressed, is it appears that some councillors are proposing to award some or all of their £1,000 member grant to organisations to which they have some sort of connection. So it may be that it's a local charity and they're a member of that local charity, and maybe it's a community group and they sit on the management board of that community group. And my advice as the monitoring officer has been to the officers who've raised this issue with me that the code of conduct requirements in relation to personal interests do apply to decisions that are made under the member grants process. So the requirement to declare a personal interest where you're a member of an organisation to which it's proposed to award grant funding, or you're on the management board, chair, secretary, treasurer, that sort of thing, one of these groups, you should be declaring those interests when the grant applications come into officers. And also there's a subset of personal interests where if the average member of the public who's fully aware of the facts felt that the connection was so close that it meant the member couldn't make a fair and impartial decision, that would then be classed as a personal interest that could lead to bias. And the code of conduct then says that a member in that situation shouldn't be involved in making that decision. Mm-hmm. Now obviously, because these are grants that are being awarded individually by ward members within their own wards, if a particular member had a personal interest that could lead to bias in the award of a grant they were proposing, that causes difficulties, because theoretically that ward member should not then be involved in making the decision to award that grant. Now, because we are aiming to get all of these grants awarded and done and dusted by the end of December, and because the next meeting of the committee isn't till the beginning of December, I felt that this was a matter that needed to be brought to the committee urgently, and with the chair's agreement, that's why we issued the extra agenda paper and report. One of the things we will get you to formally need to agree to is to consider this as an urgent item at this meeting. And then if you do agree to do that, what I've done in the report is to try and set out in a bit more detail the situation that I've just tried to summarise, and to give you two options. Now, the two options I've put forward are based on the provision of the Code of Conduct that says where a councillor has a personal interest that could lead to bias, the Member Conduct Committee has the power to grant what's called a dispensation, so that member can then go ahead and still be a decision maker in that process. So I've set out two potential options, one of which is that the Member Conduct Committee may wish to consider these situations on a case-by-case basis and decide whether or not to grant individual dispensations to councillors based on particular circumstances. And the other option is potentially granting a blanket dispensation across the board and saying, well, in making decisions on awarding member grants, councillors effectively don't need to worry about personal interests that could lead to bias, because we as the member conduct committee are happy that even if a councillor has an interest that could lead to bias, they can still go ahead and make a decision to award a member grant in that situation. I've tried to set out what I believe are the advantages and disadvantages of each of those two options. Having had a discussion with the Chief Executive earlier today, he's requested that I summarise a third potential option to you, which would be that in a situation where effectively a councillor has a conflict of interest, that the decision-making process be taken away from them, so there would be no need to grant dispensations, and that in such cases where a councillor declared a personal interest that could lead to bias in a grant they were seeking to award from their member grant pot, that decision would actually then go forward to Cabinet, to make the decision on the basis that the councillor did have a clear conflict of interest and should therefore not potentially be making a decision on the award of that grant. I understand officers have also spoken to Councillor Taylor, who's the lead member for this particular area, and I don't think she was aware of the Chief Executive's Cabinet option, but of the two options that are set out on the paper, she strongly preferred option one, i.e. that things be considered on a case-by-case basis rather than you grant blanket dispensation across the board. But there is now also that third option that the Chief Executive is suggesting, that actually in such situations, rather than granting a dispensation at all because the councillor has a clear conflict of interest, they just shouldn't be making that decision and it should be escalated up to Cabinet instead. The advantages, I think, of that Cabinet option are it's much more transparent and it sort of removes the potential of any perception of bias, because the councillor who had a conflict of interest wouldn't be making the decision. It would be a recommendation that we're going up to Cabinet for Cabinet to make the final decision. The disadvantages are quite similar to the disadvantages for option one on the paper. So Cabinet would need to consider each case as it arose, and there are obviously time implications in relation to that, both in relation to officers writing reports and Cabinet members having to consider them and make decisions. And there is also the potential that decisions made by Cabinet are subject to call-in, and therefore that could add another period of time of a couple of weeks or so onto the end of the process after Cabinet have made a decision in relation to grant awards in those sort of circumstances. That's probably all I wanted to say, Chair. I appreciate it. It's a bit confusing and might sound a bit complicated, but obviously if there are any questions or assistance I can give you as you consider and discuss this matter, I'm perfectly willing to do so, Chair.
Thank you.
Do you have option three written down?
No.
Could it be said again?
So option three would be that where a ward councillor declared that they had a personal interest that could lead to bias in an award of a grant from their £1,000 pot, effectively, rather than them making the decision to award that grant, it will be referred up with the Cabinet with a Cabinet report. So the Cabinet report would obviously set out what the grant was for, the criteria, you know, the summary of the criteria being considered against, and the ward councillor's view that it should be awarded. It would also set out the nature of the interest that they had that meant that they couldn't consider it, and they couldn't consider it, and why it was being referred up to Cabinet, and Cabinet would then make the final decision on whether or not to award a grant in that situation.
Councillor Draycott.
Yes, thank you, Councillor Draycott. I'm still not quite clear. It'd be really helpful if you could just explain a bit more about what the issue is. Using myself as an example,
okay.
I mean, I've got community groups in my ward. There was a particular situation during the summer where the particular group was wanting to put a sum of fate on. They weren't eligible for another council grant, so they had a shortfall, and I said, I've got this grant, why don't you apply for it? I'm taking it that's perfectly in order.
From the circumstances as Councillor Draycott has disclosed, Chair, I think that is perfectly in order. Maybe if I give you a hypothetical scenario.
Yes, please.
So Councillor Bloggs has decided that he wants to award £500 of his member grant pot to his local community association. He is also the treasurer of that local community association and has therefore been involved in putting together the paperwork that he submitted to himself to decide on whether or not to award the grant. Now, under the member code of conduct, he would have to declare that he had a personal interest in that item of council business, because he's obviously in a position of control or management of that community association. Now, my view as the monitoring officer would probably be that the average person in the street, if they were aware that Councillor Bloggs was the treasurer of that community organisation and had put together, had been assisting in putting together the grant bid and had sat effectively as judge on jury on whether or not to award that grant bid, probably could be held to have a personal interest that could lead to bias.
Okay, that's very helpful. I didn't realise that councillors themselves could make bids. I thought it had to come from members of the public.
Well, in that situation, Chair, the bid could come from the community group.
Oh, right.
But Councillor Bloggs may be the treasurer of that community group, or the secretary of that community group, or a board member of that community group.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, when you get your form, the borough councillor is the person that signs the form to give that money to that group.
Well, I've never signed a form. If I remember right, when it comes through, it asks, do you support or not? And I just say whether I support it or...
But if you go to the bottom, there's a signature needed.
I've done it on email. So I just fill it in online and tell you.
I've had to sign them. No. In fact, I can't send it by email, so I've had to bring them in.
No. So what do other councils do? Other councils must have come across this issue.
Just
a minute, sir.
At this present time, there are a number of other councils that operate a similar grants system, but I haven't got the replies I was expecting, because this issue has only just arisen for Charnwood Borough Council. But it's certainly something, there must be a mechanism, and my understanding is there is some sort of committee usually, or a panel that approves them, so that the objectivity is taken away, so there's no interest being declared.
Okay. Yeah, my final point was going to be then, isn't timescale going to be an issue if it's going to go to Cabinet?
Yes, it is.
And you've got to set up a panel, because there's quite a quick turnaround to some of these applications. Mm-hmm. Same would apply if it becomes the responsibility of this committee. It's the turnaround and having to arrange very quick meetings and what have you. I can just see practical issues from all of the options.
Well, I know that the ones that I have given to are for Christmas projects, what the groups want to do for Christmas, so mine's got to go through quite quickly. But I have, as it happens, I've got no interest in any of the four groups that I've given to, but it would be if I was a chairman on one. I need it before Christmas, so that they can buy the things ready for the Christmas season.
Yeah.
And this is where one of the things we've got to really watch out for.
Just explain, Chair, that obviously we do have Cabinet meetings scheduled every month. So if taking things to Cabinet was the option that the committee decided was the one you wanted to go with, we could just put a standing item on each of the Cabinet agendas between now and Christmas, if needed, for member grants that came forward under this heading. Mm.
Councillor Gerrard.
Thank you, Councillor Gerrard.
And then Councillor Craig.
I have been informed so far that the Scouts of East Goscote and the Brownies of East Goscote have each received the money that I've agreed to, but I haven't signed anything.
No.
It's just come through, do you agree? And they've had the money through, so is there something wrong? Should they have had the money?
Chair, unfortunately, neither myself or Karen are involved in the administration of the member grants process, and we can't comment on the process for agreeing and signing off the payments. So I think all we can do is give advice on the personal interest side of it.
I've had a thank you email from Dawn Manning of East Goscote Scouts to say thank you, they've got the money. So
I don't know. I know that I've had two and I've had to sign for both of them.
I haven't. That's got me worried.
I shouldn't worry about it. If they've done it, they've done it.
I'm sure it's done.
Councillor Crick. Yeah.
Can I ask? It says here each councillor is allocated £1,000. Is that each councillor or each ward?
Each councillor.
Right, so if you've got two councillors in your ward, you've got £2,000.
No. Yes. Yes, you have. Yes.
I don't think one of our councillors understood that the way they were talking at the council meeting, because they thought they had £500 each. So I shall enlighten them.
There has been some training, and I'm just having a look actually to see if I can clarify that point. But there was the material was were sent out to all the borough councillors that set out what you can or can't do with it and how much it is and whatever else. But if I could come in, when I read the two options, I just thought option two isn't an option because I just think it's dangerous for granting the blanket one. And I would go for the third option, putting it to cabinet. I don't think it's ideal, but I think it's the best out of the options we've got right now. So I would go for option three, because it just seems the most sensible option out of what we've got at the minute.
I would agree with option three, because it'd clear the borough councillor of any tie within, so to speak. You can't say, well, they're on the committee.
Yes, Councillor John Capleton. I'll go along with option three, but I just feel to actually involve cabinet, you know, for the expenditure of £1,000 is a little bit, you know, sledgehammer to crack a nut. Also, although the councillor is approving we'll give that amount of money to an organisation, the final decision whether it's suitable or not comes to the people in, you know, the officers in Charnwood who are administering the grants. Yeah. They will say, no, this one isn't suitable or that one is. So there is another little bit of sort of scrutiny in there. I was thinking maybe option one, and you form a panel, and that panel sits on an ad hoc basis if this ever arises. But I'll go along with the cabinet, that's fine.
Councillor Bentley, is cabinet aware of option three? I'm guessing probably not. So,
no.
Okay, so without them ratifying this as an option, should we even be considering it? Or is it we just going to go back to the recommendation?
Just probably worth explaining, Chair, that things get onto a cabinet agenda in two ways. So one is the leader asks for them to go onto cabinet agenda, and second one is the chief executive asked for them to go on the cabinet agenda. And as this suggestion came from the chief executive, he has control of putting things on to the cabinet agenda.
So we can't, even if we went for option three, it's still got to go through cabinet first.
No. It can be put on the agenda by the chief exec. So he could just put it on the agenda for the next meeting.
Now what I mean is that we can't say we'll have option three things, because until the cabinet has discussed it, however it gets on their agenda, we can't say that's absolutely what we want to do, shall we?
If option three is what the committee wishes to support, I think we'd have to word a resolution along the lines of the committee supports the chief executive's suggestion that in such cases the grants are referred to cabinet and request the chief executive to add them to the agenda as required, something like that.
Isn't it better to have it as a standard item, and then if any crop up and need attention for that cabinet, it can just be done?
That's the way effectively I think we would do it, Chair.
I can't support option three, Chair.
Yeah.
Can I have a show of hands then? Who would support option three?
Not ideal, but
five. Any against? No? Okay, that's
Motion, Madam Chair.
Thank you all.
I've got the work programme.
So we've just got to look now at the work programme, which is item 7 on your agenda.
This is really for information, Chair, to set out what's on your work programme for the next meetings.
Now go back to first of the agenda 8, you need to formally accept it as urgent.
Oh, yes. Need to formally accept that previous item was urgent, Chair.
Can we, are you all happy that the previous item was urgent?
Thank you.
Right, we're going to have a look on at the work programme. It's just 12 months since we actually reviewed the Constitution, isn't it? But it normally comes up about this year when we have a look at the Constitution. Has anybody got any questions they wish to ask on the work programme? Councillor Draycott.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Councillor Draycott, I don't know quite where it fits in, so I'm just going to raise the matter. At the start of every meeting now, we have this statement about videoing and filming could take place and the council has no say in the matter. But there's been an occasion where there was photographs being taken at a meeting that were quite disruptive at the meeting and was distracting members from what they were trying to do, either listen or to actually speak. So I think if somebody's filming or videoing and it's done, you know, quite unobtrusively and it's done in a sensitive way, I think that's absolutely fine. But can we or do we have any say when somebody's actually affecting the meeting and the way it's being held? And I don't know whether that's under the Constitution or what. But I just welcome the chance of raising it at this meeting, Chair.
Happy for me to answer that, Chair. Yes, so, I think the conduct of people who are filming and recording meetings and issues about if and when they become disruptive really rests with the Chair of the meeting, who has the general power to keep order and to take action to make sure meetings are run effectively and smoothly. So if a chair becomes aware that filming or recording is becoming disruptive in their view, they have the right to ask people to moderate the way they're going about it. Or equally, if an individual member of any committee feels that what's going on is becoming disruptive, they could raise point of order and ask the chair to note their concerns and make a ruling on whether or not the chair wishes to intervene and ask people again to moderate what they're doing. But it is an overriding legal requirement now that people do have the right to record and film, but they're not allowed for that to become disruptive towards the conduct of the meeting.
I just wonder if chairs know that they have that power. I think they think that they can't do anything about it, and is there a way of possibly just letting members know that yes, you have to accept this situation, but there's a way that it has to be carried out, and if not, the chair can, you know, can actually speak and say things. I think that would be useful for members to know that.
Quite happy to put something in the next members' bulletin, Chair, just reminding chairs that they have the general power to keep order in meetings, and that includes filming and recording if it becomes disruptive.
Yeah, that's a very good point. All in agreement with that.
That would be good. Thank you, Chair.
Anything else on the work programme? Anything you want to add, Andrew?
It's really for you to note what's coming up, Chair, and whether there's anything else you or the committee wish to add on for consideration at previous meetings. As you said, on the 3rd of December, we will be kicking off the review of the Constitution. So we'll have a report to you starting that process again and asking if there's anything you as a committee wish to feed into to that process.
Do you think we need to bring anything into the Constitution about these members' grants and the way that they have got to be decided? Is that a constitutional matter?
But it might not. It might not happen again.
Well, we don't.
It might be a one-off this year.
Maybe, but we don't know. We don't know.
I take advice from officers, but I wouldn't have thought it would really affect the constitution as such. I think it's just how we deal with the principles that we're expected to comply with anyway, so I don't think it really changes anything. It's just really a process that the council set up to make sure members can comply with the constitution and also the code of conduct, so I can't see that we'd need to change it at the minute for that purpose.
I think, Chair, I'd agree with Councillor Rowlands on that, that it is just a procedural, something procedural we're putting in place to ensure that the existing requirements of the Code of Conduct are complied with.
Yeah, okay.
And Chair, if I can, it's Karen Widdowson speaking. On the work programme, on the third item, there's the regular review of the Members' Code of Conduct and Planning Code. Do you wish to have the Vice Chair of the Plans Committee and Head of Planning and Regeneration attend the meeting in December as well?
I think it would be a good idea because the Code of Conduct for Planning has changed since they brought in the new ruling on what can be done, and it really is, I think, clarifying for some people. Mm-hmm. Does everybody agree?
If it has changed, then fine. But I think last year it felt a bit redundant, really. I think they came along, spent a bit of time in the meeting. I'm not really sure how much it added. But I suppose if things have changed, then maybe it's worth getting to come along.
Well, of course, the there was a lot changed to do with the planning code because the call-in was different.
Mm.
The way you call in planning applications now, and the fact that there was a lot changed, but was that covered? I think that was covered though.
That was the year before, and then this last time round there was a change in with a member. It was more to do with the planning committee itself. When members are unable to attend and speak at the meeting.
Yes, that's right.
That was one of the changes that was made. And the timeline for telling the plans committee if you wish to attend the meeting to speak on an item was brought in line with the same timeline as members of the public as well.
Mm.
But that was a slightly different issue. So.
Yes, it was. So what do you think? Do we need them to come or?
I suppose it's difficult because we don't know yet if we want to change anything. And then if we want to change anything, we probably need to speak to them and we need them at the meeting. But if we're not going to change anything, we don't. So I'm not sure.
Well, we haven't, as a group, discussed whether we want to change anything.
No.
You have? Through you, Chair, had the circumstance, I don't think it was last year, but the year before, where you discussed it and decided whether you wanted to change anything. And then if you did, when you did, you then had it at the next meeting in quarter's time, and that's when the head of planning and the Chair and Vice Chair attended.
So if we, on the meeting on December the 3rd, discuss this as a work item, then if we do want to change anything, that we do, something needs to be changed, then we can ask them to come to the meeting in March.
Mm.
The majority of this, we fell foul of this in Shepshed when we actually called in a planning application, but then we found out that the people that had been spoken to us, they agreed with the planning application. They wanted us to fight against it, but then they agreed with it because they'd met the neighbours, and so we was left, and it was too late actually to recall it, you know, because we'd called it in and we didn't turn up, and we got a right roasting for it, and I think, you know, councillors ought to really know what they can do and what they can't do. And we do have new councillors on the council now, new members on the council now that possibly don't understand the full, because it involves everybody within their ward, because they've got a planning application, doesn't it? So can we do it that way, that we look at it at the next meeting, and then if we decide there is anything that we need clarifying, we'll ask them to come in the March meeting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's sensible.
Thank you.
Good.
So that, I think that brings the meeting to a close then. It's just 8:15.
Seven.
Seven, sorry.
I'm glad you didn't go on.